The Windows Media Stream for the live broadcast of The Chris Perillo Show is provided by Limelight Networks. Listen to the live Chris Perillo Show in Windows Media Player. Download the latest version of the player for Mac and Windows users at Microsoft.com/Windows Media.
You've been doing things online for years now, almost as long as I have.
Yeah, my main flagship site, worldvillage.com, turns 10 July 2005, which is 10 years in our years, 70 in dog years, and about 700 in internet years.
Worldvillage.com?
Worldvillage.com.
What's its mission?
World Village was created as an alternative to a lot of the garbage that was then becoming prevalent on the internet. Not that we have stopped the flow of garbage that's out in a vast wasteland known as the World Wide Web. But initially it was for parents to be able to have a safe place to for their kids to be able to come, to play games online, to read software reviews from a parental perspective rather than just a gamer's perspective. We had clean chat rooms and still do. And today World Village has gone through a lot of different permutations, but it is still a leading family-friendly portal.
See, I picked up on you when you started doing Family First.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I don't know if I ever visited World Village just because I'm looking for things that aren't necessarily family-friendly, and not to say that I visit non-family-friendly sites on a regular basis, just that, you know, my family is a family of adults and a couple of dogs.
Right.
So I wouldn't necessarily use that particular resource in general.
Yeah, your perspective changes a little bit once you have children of your own.
And
I've got two of them and a dog, and I like to protect him online, too.
Oh, really? So your dog does surfing?
He does. Yep. Socrates the Wonder Dog.
So is Socrates going to be launching any kind of website soon?
It's kind of funny because I did register SocratesLife.com and thinking that he would make a great brand.
Did he? Or did the IPO didn't happen? No investors?
No, not yet, but, you know, I might give him a nickel to blog his first entry, so we'll see how that goes.
Well, I find that, we have all these interesting ideas, and sometimes we'll go and register a domain and then not have time to follow it up.
You know, I did that recently. In fact, in combination with the overwhelming amount of stuff that I have, you know, if you're like me, you probably get lots of review copies of various software and DVDs and whatnot, and I've just got shelves, bookshelves of stuff, and I started a site a few months ago called winmystuff.com where I intended to give away another piece of my stuff every day, and it was going really good for a couple months, and I just got overwhelmed with trying to keep up with it and the various contests, and as we speak, I'm in the phase of rethinking it and trying to relaunch it again because the people who have been coming to it love it.
So what's the business model?
For Win My Stuff, it's really...
You know, I have to ask.
There really isn't. I probably could make more money selling a lot of these items on eBay, but I don't have the time to do it. And so really what I'm doing is just developing loyalty with the fan base that's out there. And it's an AdSense play as well. You know, if people come to the page and they end up clicking on a few of my ads and putting a few dollars in my pocket, I'm a happy guy.
So you've obviously offset a lot of your time by using AdSense, at least on this site in particular. Are all your sites having some kind of strategy with Google AdSense too?
Absolutely. Just about every site does. AdSense is a gold mine, and people who aren't using it and implementing it properly on their websites are just, they're missing out. They're leaving money on the table.
So you have so many websites, much like myself, that it's almost impossible to keep up with everything that you're doing. And sometimes it just takes talking to you like this to discover everything it is that you are involved in.
There are literally dozens of them. You know, there's a few large flagship sites. WorldVillage.com is one. You mentioned FamilyFirst.com. And DealOfDay.com, which we can talk about in a little bit, is another one of my flagship sites. But apart from those, there are literally dozens of smaller sites that, you know, I constantly test the waters to see what's going to work out there in the marketplace.
Well, it's good timing then at this point in the conversation to bring up the fact that you were pretty much instrumental in turning me onto AdSense, not necessarily from using it, because I was using it, as you remember, for a while, but not in the same way that I've seen it used today, at least throughout my various web properties. So for that, I just want to thank you publicly.
Well, you're welcome. It's kind of funny. I need to go into my home computer. I'm at work right now, but on my home computer I've got the ICQ log. And probably if I get that to you, you can blog about it, because I remember saying, hey, dude, you got to check this out. And you're like, what? You know, I'm busy.
Well,
and a couple days later, you send back to you, oh, my God, you're not going to believe it.
Well, but at that point I was, because if you remember, I was at the stage in working Locker Gnome, and at that point trying to take care of Gnome decks as well as, you know, other things that were under my umbrella, trying to figure out how I was going to find another salesperson. And so I was faced with the frustration of having to work with another media company who didn't care anything about my bottom line, or who wasn't really providing any type of personal service, and really just kind of not helping me at all. In fact, in some ways, running an ad network that, and for example, there's one big banner network who you still work with, I no longer do because I needed some changes, and they told me that it wasn't good for their business model. And I said, really? So I removed them from my websites altogether. We'll see how good that is for their business model.
Right.
You know, having to work with another one of these companies was just, I didn't want to do it. But faced with having to hire another salesperson was even more frustrating, because you find a good salesperson and they cost you a lot, but a bad salesperson costs you even more.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I've been lucky. Some of the people in recent years who have worked with Locker Gnome on sales have been very, very good. And, you know, when they were no longer working with the organization, yes, I definitely felt an impact. And, you know, when they were no longer there, I had to face, well, God, what am I going to do now? And that's when, you know, that conversation really started between me and you in terms of really looking at AdSense as a way to not just augment. Now, this is the big thing I've been evangelizing, you know, since really being turned on to the power of AdSense. Not just augment our bottom line, but really you solidly support it. I mean,
it has transformed our business models entirely, turned them on its head.
And that's not—it's not a dramatic statement. It's just the truth. You know, from my perspective, and I know what it's been for you.
Well, yeah, when you realize that the money truck is backing up to your door, and all you've got to do is catch it, you find new ways to, you know, give me a bigger glove, give me a bucket. You know, give me something, a wheelbarrow to catch it in, because it's there. It's there for the taking, and most people don't realize it.
Yeah, and these are secrets, of course, that you and I kind of swap back and forth in terms of, in generality, because, you know, of course, with the Google AdSense terms of service, you can't really discuss everything that has to do with your account. But in generalities, we are able to you know, intercommunicate all these tips and tricks and thoughts and perspectives, and then finally, you just put it all together in words. I mean, it's specifically words that you're sharing with other people, like beyond
right.
You and me. How's that going for you?
Well, it's going good. The encouragement of yourself and several other people that I had shared my tips with, I put together an ebook called What Google Never Told You About Making Money with AdSense. And it's a brief book. It's 57 pages, but it is absolutely packed with the tips and the methods that we've put to work, that we've tested, that you don't read about on Google's site, and they work. And, you know, Google just changed their terms of service. You still are not allowed to discuss the metrics such as your click-through rate and your CPM and your impressions, as recently as just a few weeks ago, you couldn't discuss how much money you were making either. You can now, but back before you could, I asked Google's permission, and they said that would be fine. You can reveal your gross amount. And I was earning in November over $15,000, and in last December I earned over $18,000.
And of course, if anybody wants to get the ebook, just go to Google and search for AdSense Secrets. And the reason why I say that is because I'm the number one hit for AdSense Secrets. And,
hey, not fair.
And of course, no. The link that you'll find on that page is specifically one to download the ebook. So that's probably the easiest way to explain to people how to get it. AdSense Secrets, search for it on at least Google, will get you there. And I'm currently the number one hit for AdSense Secrets, which I suppose, if you're going to be anywhere for that particular set of keywords, number one would be a pretty solid place.
Number one is good. You got to be happy with that.
Well, and there's been, you know, a small amount of, I don't want to say conflict or backlash. You're obviously organizing the information. You're putting it together, and you're answering questions that may already be on the web, or are you really explaining to people something that they can't find anywhere else.
You know what? I didn't go out and read other people's literature or do a whole bunch of research apart from my own testing. And that's what's in this ebook. Here is what I did. I went from making $30 a day to over $500 a day. And here's how I did it. Here's the tips and tricks that you want to apply in order to move that same direction. I've heard some people's results the same day, they're doubling and tripling, and I've heard from people a few weeks later saying they're making four or five times what they were making before with the same number of impressions.
Wow.
You know, somebody can go out there and they could research all over the internet and try to dig up a tip here and a trick there, but you know, who's got the time? We've compiled it, we've tested it, and here it is. And I'm even following it up with additional tips and tricks via email.
Oh, wow. So it's a continual type of service. Not
that's
just
right,
a,
and I'll tell you what, okay. Version 2.0 is already being worked on, and I hope to have that available next month.
Not to put you on the spot, but is there any chance to making an executive summary?
In terms of what's in the book?
Yeah.
In fact, we're putting together a sample right now with a table of contents in the first two chapters that hopefully I'll have this ready in the next week or so where people can come and download the table of contents. I didn't want to clutter up the actual page with it because there's a lot of content as there is right now. In fact, one of the cool things we just added is an AdSense income calculator, where you can go, if you'll scroll about three-quarters of the way down the page, you can enter your number of impressions and your click-through rate. We've put in a default of 15 cents per click value, which is pretty low, but average for a lot of sites. And then you can see, if you were to double, triple, and quadruple that, how much money you could be making or how much money you're leaving on the table.
Well, what I'm hoping to do is quite possibly offer some kind of customized version of this for Gnomedex attenders. Like people who are signing up for Gnomedex. We're already working on an executive summary, like a white paper of sorts for RSS. And I think it would be just as nice to be able to offer attendees kind of like a, you know, I don't want to say a teaser, really kind of more of a structured document explaining, you know, what it is that you're talking about. And quite honestly, I really believe this, you're underselling that document, like, by hundreds of dollars. Because it's only, what, now? What are you selling it for at this point?
It's a $99 ebook, and it is on sale right now for $79,
dude.
And that price will be going up.
Dude, well, it should be. And you know, I told you that when you first launched it. I said, dude, that's a mistake. Because I know what it did for Locker Gnome. I know what it did for me. And I've paid for that ebook so many times over, it's even funny.
You paid for it the first day.
and that's the thing. You know, to outlay money and to put money down on something, people have to think, you know, how's it going to benefit me? And, you know, how is it going to benefit me beyond what it's costing me now? So you go to a burger joint, you pay for a hamburger. Is it really worth a dollar? Probably not. But it at least satisfies your hunger to a certain degree, but it's not doing anything for you. There's no information in a hamburger. It's not going to add to your bottom line. But just spending $100, which in my opinion, for people who are running websites or thinking about running websites that are content driven, is just, it's almost essential. Because, and you know, obviously sales pitch, but hey, I'm a believer. You know, I'm a big Google AdSense evangelist. I was invited down to Mountain View to specifically talk to a handful of people who were using AdSense and telling them exactly how it changed my life. And I hate sounding like an infomercial and a salesperson, but there's a reason why my page is number one for AdSense secrets. They're out there. Google understands it to a certain degree, but I think now they're getting to the point where they want more people to use AdSense the right way. And putting the information together in an ebook format is just perfect. It's right there on the screen.
It's funny, as we're talking, I just got an email from Google just now. Many people might not have ever heard about the UPS or the FedEx Club. Actually, Google never tells anybody that they have this. This is the actual first email I've ever received, and that's why I paused here for a second, because I blinked and thought, what is this? Affiliates who display AdSense and make over $10,000 a month no longer get their check delivered by United States Postal Service. it comes off the truck, UPS or FedEx.
Yeah.
And mine has been coming via UPS, the brown truck, two-day delivery. And I just got an email saying that they're going to be using DHL going forward.
Well, that's just silly. I can save you $30. They've got
and
a beta
they're
for...
they're going to be charging us $25.
Yeah. Well, just go with the EFT, Electronics Funds Transfer, which they just announced the other day along with those the links, which is a new set of Google AdSense code that supplements content.
Have you tested those much yet?
Yeah, I haven't done too much. I put them up on a page where I knew there'd be a white or a hot spot for visibility, and I haven't had a chance to thoroughly track it down to channel. I don't think it's hurting us necessarily, but it takes a while to really see, you know, the impact of something. I'm the kind of guy who leaves it there for about a month or so, and then I change it if I don't think it's working well, and then I'll know like immediately whether it's working better by doing it a new way or not. And the fact that, you know, Google's even doing it, I think is fantastic. And I don't know if you caught a lot of, you know, the ad blocking buzz that's been going around, but I wrote on a blog this morning. Unfortunately, it was blocked because apparently my IP had some kind of issue being with Comcast. But they were asking about technologies that specifically block things like Google AdSense, and I take the perspective that AdSense, yes, it is advertising, but I think it's supplemental to content. Personally. I've never felt guilty about clicking on an AdSense link, and I don't think anybody out there has. Seriously, I think twice when I see a banner ad. It's like, ooh, I don't want to click that because then I'm supporting it. But then I see AdSense, it's just like, wow, there's something that's contextually relevant to the content that I wanted to read. I think it's great. I seriously do. Everybody's a winner.
You know, there's a freebie for those listening in us right now, that one of the tricks to being successful with AdSense is to not make your ads look like ads.
Well, they're not. You know. They are ads, but see, that's what I can't get anybody or a few people to wrap their heads around, is that it's really supporting the content. The way that,
how is it different from having a link on your own page to additional information on the topic that you're covering?
Or my case in point, who's getting hurt? Who, honestly, who is hurting? Google's gaining relevance for the people who buy AdWords, and AdWords, of course, is the, I guess, the auction engine that drives AdSense. So they're supporting them. Google's supporting their bottom line because, of course, they get paid whenever someone buys an AdWord or a series of them. And then the publisher, for displaying AdSense, is not only adding relevance to the content that they're already writing, but it's happening automatically. So they're saving support costs of having to hire another salesperson. And then the reader goes to the web page, and they read the content, and then they happen to see something that, wow, this is also very interesting. And it brings them into a richer experience through whichever website they happen to be reading. So I seriously do not see where anybody is hurt by contextual-based advertising. I just cannot see it. Now, pop-ups, don't even get me started on pop-ups.
Yeah, sorry about that. It happens. Maybe that may be a new bumper sticker. Pop-ups happen.
Oh, God. Well, you know, here's the thing. I see pop-ups as invasive, and they're not contextually relevant. And I don't see Google AdSense as advertising so much as I see it as a supportive technology that only benefits everybody. I mean, it's just so... If I turned on the TV and saw nothing but commercials that made sense for me and my lifestyle, great. If I never see another commercial for tennis balls, well, my life is no better or no worse for it. But at this point, it seems like certain advertising technologies are spray and pray. And I think the future of, and I'm not going to say just AdSense in general, but contextual-based relevance of advertising is going to become more important just because of the success that you and I and countless others have seen with Google AdSense.
Well, absolutely. Google's been huge, and look who's knocking on the door now. Here comes Yahoo / Overture, which I guess they're renaming.
Search services?
Something like that. I don't care what it is, as long as it's a solid competitor, because competition in the marketplace is good for everybody.
Yep.
And as much as I love Google, you know, I'm sure we'll be playing around with the service Yahoo has to see if we can generate even more revenue from them.
And in part, it's communicating with other people who are doing similar things and not having to worry about being on your lonesome trying to get this information to work. The information is sitting right there.
That's right.
It's just waiting to happen. In fact, you and I have been working on a few joint ventures together, some of which have been quite successful. And most of it is driven because we've got a community, Locker Gnome, this community, who's reading newsletters, reading the RSS feeds, you know, attending Gnome Decks, doing all these things. And now you and I have launched encyclopedia.lockergnome.com. And that is just a treasure trove of information that we're now linking to and sending people to. And then quotes.lockergnome.com. And these are co-brands. These are joint ventures between you and me.
And there's more on the way.
Woohoo! Wait!
As soon as I can get my developer working, he's only one guy.
Oh, I know.
Bless his heart.
But you know what? It's really helped us because and that's where I've really seen AdSense kind of help offset a lot of my costs, is that there are people who are already doing things. There are people who have already assembled the information. I just as soon, you know, pay attention to them and, you know, according to their whatever they want, pay that to them and then get the information that I need and then take that ball and run with it, which is why I don't necessarily have an issue of anybody who's taking content that should it be free? Should it not be free? Well, that's a question. If it adds to your bottom line, even if it is free, there's no reason why you shouldn't pay for information that's going to provide you an easier way of doing business or just being online. I know plenty of people who write and don't necessarily have a business, but by putting AdSense on there, they're able to offset a lot of costs. In fact, you know, sometimes pay the monthly electric or ISP, you know, the bills.
Everybody can be a publisher. Everybody that has a website is a publisher, even if they're retailing product. I've seen sites put AdSense on those pages where they're selling product and they've made more money from the AdSense than they do profit on the product that they're trying to ship to people.
It's scary. But it's
everybody
cool.
Everybody is a publisher. And everybody should be. Everybody should be developing content. Everybody should be working. You know, the first thing I recommend is if you're passionate about a site, a topic, you develop a site based on that passion, because that's going to be evergreen for you. You're going to continue to coddle that site, to love that site, to add content to that site, and you never want to stop doing that. You always add new content. And, of course, you do that daily with your blogs, as do I, and the search spiders love it because they come and visit us every day.
Well, it's relevance, and, you know, nobody's perfect. I mean, I've made, you know, there's times where I can't post for a week, and I can't do everything perfectly, and just say something that is completely off the wall, and sometimes people may not be attracted to that. In terms of, like this morning, I was testing something, so I typed in blah, and so now I've got an entry, blah, and that's all it says is blah. The title, the summary, the body, blah. And I've actually gotten more comments on that than I do from some of my more prolific posts.
Are you depressed today, Chris? Do we need to talk?
No, it's not a depression. It was more like I was testing something, because my the person that I'm using for the blog publishing tool has set it up so that my RSS feeds are not completely customizable. They only work one way or another. It's like a bit. It's either on or off. And I'm kind of frustrated because I want it to work one way, not another, and I was trying to mess around with some of the templates, but unfortunately the system is so easy to use that it's hard for me to use, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, you like to get under the hood and fiddle a little bit more.
Yeah, sometimes. And sometimes that breaks things, unfortunately.
No. Yeah. That's why we hire people.
Right, yes, of course, hiring people. But you know what? I just assume, you know, like yourself, if you have an idea, try it on your own, you know, before necessarily having to take it to the next level. You start something based on ideas that you already have, and then if it works, then you can kick it up a notch. Kind of like the idea, the giveaway site?
Win My Stuff.
Win My Stuff?
Yeah.
Is that kind of the way that you operate as well?
Well, you know, that's just been like a pet project. It's you know, a trial balloon. I've never really intended to monetize that. It was just a way to do something nice for people and clear out the stuff in my office.
I'm looking around, and I think I may have to do it, too.
There's just so much, and you know, and people love it. They love contests. I come up with different, you know, things to do. Of course, it's been a few weeks, so I can't even recall what I had done last. But you know, if I'm giving away a DVD, it's a sci-fi movie, I might make people guess what my favorite sci-fi flick is. You know, and then if I get a few people that give me the same answer, I'll just pick a random entry from them, or I'll say, I'm thinking of a number between 1 and 100.
Oh gosh. You know?
And they'll post a number, and whoever's closest wins for that day. Other days, I'll tell them, write whatever you want. I'm not telling you what my criteria is, and I'll look at it and say, you know, I like what this guy said, or this guy made me laugh, or this guy's totally off the wall. And I'll send a prize to whoever.
After doing Rent My Chest, as a matter of fact, I've got another one sitting in my inbox that needs to be done, just got the other day. I can say doing things like that, it has to be a labor of love. And not that I'm comparing my...
I wonder about you.
Yeah, I'm not comparing my chest directly to the effort that you have, all these things that you're giving away to your following. But, you know, it's definitely not the best use of my time.
Well, and some of us couldn't do it. I'm too hairy, so
you
wouldn't be able to read the writing.
You know, I've only got like 4 hairs on my chest, and on the good pictures you can actually see them. It's funny, my legs are just hairy as all get out, and then... my chest is just, like, completely bare, as is my back. And then on my head, I mean, dude, poofball.
Well, as far as that goes, my hairline is receding. I could rent my forehead, but, you know.
You know,
I've got pride.
I'm toying with the idea of doing a rent my chest for a year. So it's basically I would have this on at any given time, you know, have it on. No one's going to be able to see it because I wear clothes everywhere. But since some guy did it for, like, what, $30,000 on eBay?
I don't think it actually sold. I think he tried to.
I thought it did.
I thought he had to relist it because it didn't get...
Suck.
They didn't pay.
Well,
can you imagine somebody not coming through on eBay?
Ugh.
The nerve.
Yeah, go figure. I mean, that's the nice thing about having something where you know the transaction is valid, without having to worry about making the sale and then having them renege on it. And I've never really done that much with eBay. I have an eBay ID that got reset because of the switch over from .NET, Microsoft's .NET passport, or the passport thing that they had. But I haven't really done a lot of eBaying. I'll usually use either Craigslist, or sometimes I'll even post it on my blog. Like, hey, I got this, I need to get rid of it. Make me an offer. So.
You know, I was really big on eBay for a period of time during, you know, since I've been around since 95, I rode the internet wave up to the top, and in 2000 when the bubble burst, you know, I had to lay off just about everybody and rode it back down again, and so I did a lot of eBay to supplement my income, hundreds of items buying and selling, and I specialized in old software, particularly vintage computer games.
Mm.
And to this day, I'm looking here in my office at just boxes and boxes of the old classics on floppy disk, 3.5 and 5.25 inch. I collect them myself, and then the rest of what I have is sitting here in the office ready to be sold. And I figure they're just accumulating in value, either that or they're becoming more worthy of the trash bin every day. I'm not sure which.
So where do you think we are in terms of having the bubble rise and then burst? There are a lot of speculation saying that there's almost a renaissance happening. Where do you think it is?
I know where we are. I'll tell you exactly where we are. Back in the beginning, there were venture capitalists, and they were greedy, and they wanted to make a ton of money, and so they threw millions upon millions at anything with the .com. They didn't care if the business model was legitimate or not. Well, the majority of them were not, so much so that the only thing that survived out of pets.com is the sock puppet, you know, and he's doing commercials for somebody else right now. And so it was all paper money. It was play money. You had companies that were staffing up to the hilt. They were having these big office parties and celebrating like it was 1999, and it was. But then 2000 hit, and these businesses showed their bottom line to be way in the red, and they failed. They had to close their doors. Well, everybody then faced the trickle-down effect. You, me, every other site out there of any kind of publisher, the advertising dollar flow stopped, and it took time to regroup. Some of us survived. Many did not. What we've got happening now is a revolution, because we have more people getting online than ever before, therefore more businesses are getting online, advertising, especially contextual advertising through Google AdWords, has been incredibly successful, and it's real money, real businesses with real business models making real money, real bottom lines, and that's just going to continue to grow. And so I think that the boom we saw before was short-lived, it was fast, and it was a lot of fun, but what we've got going on now going forward is going to be here for a long time.
You think it's better then?
I think that it's more consistent. The money that we were seeing before was just, it was ridiculous.
Now, did you get...
I remember Pets.com paying us a $10 bounty for every new customer we sent. Like Drugstore.com paid us a $10 bounty, and they offered the customer $10 off their first purchase. So we were sending customers by the hundreds to drugstore. They would go and they would find an item that was $10 or, you know, in that area. They'd get it for a buck or so with shipping, and we still ended up getting that $10 bounty.
Yeah.
It was outrageous. Nobody's doing that now. They can't do that now because they can't survive to do that. Fortunately, drugstore survived. I don't know how, but they survived. But many of the other casualties did not.
Now, did you actually get caught up with some of that VC stuff?
No, I never wanted to take money from a venture capitalist because I know it meant giving away a large chunk of my business, and I determined that above anything else, I was going to stay autonomous, and I did. Now, I did sell a site, which was pretty exciting. Back in 1997, myself and a programmer out in San Diego put together ClassicGames.com, which was our Java gaming site, and it was for hearts, spades, bridge, chess, checkers, poker, where people could team up and play against each other. And then I tried to sell that to various search engines back in 97, and that's back when most of the search engines thought that they were primarily search engines, before the light went on that, oh, we're portals and we need to provide a full service. Well, Yahoo came knocking on our door, and if you go to Yahoo Games today, that is the fruit of my labors.
Wow, really?
Yeah, they ended up buying that in 97, and my partner went to work for Yahoo as their chief game Yahoo, and he was with them for 7 years. He just left last year.
Holy cow.
And is enjoying lots of rest.
I bet. God, I can only imagine. I never sold anything that I know of to any company, whether VC funded or not. I ended up merging very briefly with another entity and then subsequently severing that relationship. I'm still around. I don't know if I don't think that particular entity is still around, but having done most of this from Iowa, it wasn't in the culture. I mean, had I done it in, you know, if I was still living in San Francisco or even to a certain degree LA or now Seattle, I'm sure it would have played out much differently. I would have been connected with a completely different set of people.
Right. Who knows? If thens. But the price was right. You know, something really funny too with the Yahoo Games. I'm sure a lot of your listeners play Yahoo Games. If you go and you sit down to any of the tables that have the little face icons where you can select who you want to be at that table,
yeah,
there's one of a guy that's got glasses and a goatee, and that's yours truly.
So you always have a goatee. You never shave.
So, yeah, I've had a goatee for 10 years or so. It's been there, and that is me. My effigy is immortalized on Yahoo Games.
Impressive. Most impressive.
I tell people, that's me, and they go, no way. Way?
They think you're kidding.
Yeah, they do.
Wow. And you make residuals, I'd assume.
Not anymore. It's been, you know, the contract was for a two-year period for the fee plus residuals, but that's been over for quite some time, so I've had to move on and find other ways to generate revenue.
So, see here, you're coming up upon a decade. And your efforts really sound like they're all over the map, which isn't a bad thing. I mean, diversify, diversify, diversify. It's as true for dot-coms as it is for portfolios. Do you have any one particular, I guess, big thing that's going on right now? Or is that this particular ebook and everything that's going to stem from it?
The ebook is huge. The response to this has caused me to take a longer look at ebooks. You know, I'm been a publisher online, a content provider. Now I'm an author, and doing a lot of interviews, and did a teleseminar last night, and I'm already having the next ebook put together, and it's going to be something totally different. You know, talk about it now for something completely different. This next ebook is going to be on how to date online.
Oh, wow.
For singles to, you know, people, they're looking for relationships, and there's enough guides out there on how to pick up, you know, women. And that type of stuff, that doesn't, you know, that doesn't interest the majority of people that are looking for real relationships.
Well, I can tell you, that's necessary. I mean, I met my fiancé online. We met through Match.com.
Oh, great. Well, maybe we'll include your testimony in the ebook then.
It's funny. Because of the testimony I did for the AdSense ebook, some people who I know on a professional and personal level have emailed me or IM'd me and said, is this true? I'm like, yeah, it's true. Do you think I'm going to put my name and face and quote up there if it wasn't? No.
Well, they thought maybe I stole your likeness.
Yeah, seriously. Know. No, I kid you not. I mean, sometimes that happens. Every once in a while, I'll get a response from a feedback form by someone who uses my name and email address as and pretends to be me. And it doesn't happen all that often, but when it does, I'm able to squash it really quickly. I mean, that's the nice thing about using RSS to track the conversation, is that I'm able to pick up on those things and take care of them before they become a problem.
Well, let's face it, people are skeptical. A lot of people are skeptical by nature because there are so many scams online. And, you know, I've got better things to do than try to scam a few dollars from somebody. I'm providing real information and real service, and I've got my name. You know, I got my reputation that I want to keep untarnished. You know, people will email me occasionally, you know, I've been burned before. Can you tell me, you know, you've got your chart on your page that shows how much you made, but you've blocked out the impressions and your click-through rate. I need to know what that says before I can trust you. And I say, guys, I'm not going to, you know, crush my relationship, jeopardize my relationship with Google because you want to see my numbers. I've got 100% no-hassle money-back guarantee on this thing.
Yep.
And I have given money back to the people who have read it and said, you know, this isn't for me. You know, they've been very few and far between, but I don't want to keep people's money if they're not getting benefit from the product.
Now, does that hold true then, like, for a certain period of time, the money-back guarantee?
Well, basically, I tell people put it to the test for 30 days.
Okay.
And if you don't see the increase in your AdSense revenue, send me an email. Tell me your URL. Let me look at your site and give you my own personal analysis. And there have been a few people that have emailed me and told me, you know, I've tried this and it hasn't worked for me. The majority of the emails I get, it does work fabulously. But for those it doesn't, I look at their site and then I go, wait a second, you haven't applied what I told you to do in the book. No wonder it's not working. And so we'll all suggest some changes for them. And then they'll say, oh, look at that. It's
See,
okay.
The way that I approach it, and some people have asked me to help them with their websites, and yeah, I'll do it. I'll do it for just basically a flat fee. I'll take an initial look at a website or just, you know, an entity and say, this is what you need to change. I won't do it, unfortunately, for the price that you're selling it for, and for my time is very, very extremely limited, and so the bar that I have is just definitely in a different price range. But some people have asked, you know, Chris, what do I need to do to do this? And I said, well, I could tell you, but I don't have a lot of time, and I need to spend time maximizing the things that I'm doing. So I have availed myself at a certain level to help people on an individual basis, but unfortunately it's not necessarily something that everybody could afford. And it's not that everything I do you have to pay for. I mean, hey, this show is free. This interview is obviously free. There are things that I do for free, but then there are things that are very time intensive that I know the value of the information. And seriously, that's where I say I think you're still underselling that ebook. I mean, if I help anybody with any type of AdSense or site optimization, you're already talking a minimum of $3,000. That's me, because of the time that I take and the information that I have in what I'm doing with Locker Gnome, in what I'm doing with Gnomedex, in what I'm doing with different companies like Microsoft, Yahoo, Google, all these things come into play. So, hey, I think even if you're raising the price from $99 or what is it now, $79
for... It's $79 for the time being, and it is going up.
Yeah, I don't know what it's going up to, or do you know?
Well, initially I'm going to raise it to 99. And I hear you saying it should be significantly more than that.
You know,
and perhaps when version 2 comes out, that's what I'll do.
I honestly think that you can take the approach a couple of different ways. I'd just as soon work with less people and maximize what they're doing. And of course, you know, for friends, yes, and people who I know on a personal level, I'm a lot more willing to, you know, work in different capacities. But for just someone off the street who needs help, who I know is making money and know has a business model, then to me it's like, well, why should I give my information away? Why should I help you in such a way that I get cheated in a way? And that's where I face a conundrum. You know, we sell ebooks as well, you know, through LockerGnome, and yes, some of the information is already available online, but it's the convenience of having put it together and organized it in easily digestible, non-DRM format that is really what people, I think, want to pay for. They want to pay for that convenience, or they should want to pay for that convenience. How much is your time worth, Joel?
Well, you know, there's only so many hours in a day.
Exactly. And to try to convey this to, and of course I'm speaking to you as a contemporary, to try to convey this to someone who either works for somebody else or has never tried to provide a service online or offline, it's like talking to a brick wall. They automatically think differently. It's like for GnomeDex, we have hard costs to cover. And in doing GnomeDex this year, to be able to put, you know, food in front of people, or literally at their beck and call throughout the day, the scheduled events, to give them both Wi-Fi and a dedicated power outlet, and to give them all of these other things that we're going to be passing along, like resources not only there, but online, connections, information, it all costs something. And some people see that as, they think it should be free. How do you answer that question when someone tells you, literally, they don't ask you, they tell you that the information that you have should be free?
I tell them, okay, go ahead and create it, and then it's yours for free.
Exactly.
You know, a worker is worth his wages, and, you know, if somebody has worked to compile, to create, then there is an intrinsic value to it, and anybody who thinks it should be given away for free, that's nothing more than a leech.
Now, when you say leech, how do you define that?
How do I define a leech? I mean, it's almost to the degree of theft, but a leech is somebody who just wants to benefit off somebody else's labor.
Do you find that most of the people who have supported you throughout these years for your free resources like World Village or Family First, do you find them warm to these new ventures or a little turned off?
I haven't really gotten any complaints from my particular audience, you know. And by the way, they're not leeches. I am offering them free information on my site. You know, your content is free, and you're happy to give it to people. And in offering it, they're just grateful recipients. But those who would expect something that you have placed a dollar value on to be given away for free are those that I would consider the leeches. And that probably is not the majority of your audience.
No.
You know, most people know value when they see it, and they're willing to pay for it.
Sometimes it takes a little explanation, and I've been very nice, especially in a public fashion, when explaining, you know, what it's like to walk this path. And I'm very lucky. I consider myself very lucky to not only have, you know, survived the dot-com boom and subsequent bust, but also to have had a viable business model that has lasted this long. And then to kick it up a notch, I had to make changes with LockerGnome and my presence online within the past year that, quite honestly, upset a few people. But I had to do it. I see a lot of traditional email newsletters that are just going to die, or they're going to have to change their model because the world doesn't work the way it did in 1996. It's a completely different conversation, it's a completely different style of publishing, and it's a completely different market. And LockerGnome had to evolve. And when I try to explain this to people, they don't get it. They want things to be at the point they were when they first found out about you.
Are comfortable with things. They want things to stay the same. They resist change,
so,
and that's what happened.
But how do you address that? Or have you addressed that? Has World Village changed from the time that you launched it to today? Has it fundamentally, in terms of delivery, in terms of information, in terms of structure, in terms of voices, what have you done or have you done or needed to do anything to ensure its present success and future success?
Well, like yourself, I'm depending a lot more on RSS and depending a lot more on the Google advertising on the page. And I have even added on some certain sites and pages the cursed pop-ups or pop-unders in order to monetize my site, because I do have expenses. I've got two T1s I pay for. I have six servers that I maintain. I have office space. I have to pay contract laborers, writers, insurance. You know, there's a lot to take care of, and a lot of people don't understand. You know, they come and they think you're a guy sitting, you know, in front of your computer in your underwear or something. What kind of expenses could you possibly have? And there is a lot that goes on behind the scenes, and if you can't find a way to monetize that and pay those expenses, guess what happens? You become pets.com.
Now, what happens then when someone visits one of your resources and they block a pop-up, which is probably happening more frequently than not?
And will continue to, and pop-ups are going the way of the dinosaur. Well, I don't get paid for it.
Is that the only possible way of monetizing the page?
No, there's others, and you know, I have exercised a lot of different options in terms of monetizing those pages, various types of ads, and I have resisted the interstitial ad. That is just one place I really don't want to go.
Yeah.
You know, at least with a pop-up, a pop-under, you can close it, or it's behind your other window. With an interstitial, it's in your face, and the only way to get to your content is to click past it.
See, LockerGnome in its evolution, I mean, we used to go out in just, like, newsletter format, and that was it. That was 100% of it. And it worked for the old way of doing things. And it's outdated, unfortunately. And, yes, there are some people that are still pursuing that model, but it's just a matter of time, mark my words, before they have to change. It doesn't work anymore because of support costs and, you know, a billion other things, the way email works versus the way the web works. You'd use each particular mechanism differently, but LockerGnome itself has become the interstitial, meaning we'll notify you about new content. We'll give you, hey, this is kind of the basics of, this is what we found, this is the information we've got. If you want to find out more, we've got more information on this page. And then going there is where you discover everything, and then consequently, you get to see what else we have to offer. So you go to, let's say you read an article on... blocking pop-up windows. So you go to read this, you read the article, oh, okay, so that's an interesting software, this is something interesting that the courts have just passed down. Here's more information on stopping pop-ups. Look at this. Chris Perillo also offers a show in MP3 format. This is great. I'd like to find out more. Oh, they've got an encyclopedia? So it enhances, in my opinion, it enhances our connections with the community. Because,
well, right, and your so-called interstitials become the content,
yeah,
which is really a lot like what we were discussing that Google AdSense is all about.
You become, I think, the ultimate interstitial is you. I mean, you as the content provider.
I am the ultimate interstitial.
Well, but for your audience, everybody, you know, if you have the mentality that, look, I'm not trying to tick anybody off, I'm just trying to help people. We share tons of resources on a daily basis. I mean, this is just us, and it sounds like you're along the same lines, offering a lot of information on, if not daily, then a regular basis. And to do this, you really are providing that service, and you need to make sure that your nut is covered. Otherwise, you're going to have people knocking on your door, like for E&O insurance, or these things that regular web servers just don't understand need to be there.
Right.
If you're pulling it off... I'm not much on pop-ups, though. I can't defend that choice. I can't.
That's okay. You don't have to. I'm
well,
good with that.
Thank you for allowing me to do that. Well, and I think the reason why pop-ups and I see them as invasive is because 9 times out of 10 they don't offer me any value, and that's where I become frustrated with web advertising that's not contextually relevant. Personally.
I agree, and the fact is I block most of them myself, even on the sites that I've run them. But it's not something that's prevalent. You don't find them all over the place on my sites. It's a few select ones here and there, and more often than not, it's a test. But they do help to monetize, and obviously the advertisers are getting enough click-through from them to continue advertising.
Really? So You said just a few minutes ago that you think they're going to go away.
I do, because pop-up lockers. I don't think because of their... I think they're very effective, but I think that as more people install pop-up blockers and ongoing versions of, you know, I think the Google toolbar has a pop-up blocker, the
yep.
Alexa toolbar has it, Internet Explorer has a built-in blocker now, doesn't it?
Yep.
And so, you know, there's lots of ways to block. If you're using Firefox, you've got a blocker. I believe Opera has a blocker. And so the effectiveness isn't being questioned. It's just that you're not going to be able to get the impressions and displays because the tools won't allow them.
Why then, and I know where I draw the line, and I define that very clearly in terms of why I don't like pop-up windows, but yet I don't mind advertising on a web page. I think they're two completely, they're different. I mean, they're in the same genre, but they're completely different.
Well, you're a proponent of contextual advertising.
Oh, big time!
It's the best kind. There's no doubt about it. It's the best kind for everybody, for the visitor.
Okay, now Joel, I got to call you on that. Back that up. Why is it the best kind?
Because,
in your opinion,
because content is king. And if you're going to a web page to look for information on a certain topic, those ads that are relevant to your topic are not in your face. They are there as additional information in case you would like to go there. And that is exactly what the advertiser, the sponsor, is looking for. They're wanting to capture the eyeballs of somebody that wants to buy their widget. And if it turns out that the ad for their widget is exactly what the visitor is looking for, they are more than happy to pay the price for that click to get that visitor to come to them.
Okay, now let me ask you this question. And this may be sounding like it's coming from left field, but believe me, it's relevant. How do you think the success of contextual-based advertising, as you and I and many others have discovered, is going to impact other services, information services, audio-based, like this particular interview that we're doing right now, or even video-based, like what you'd see on television? How does it impact their credibility? How does it impact their viability?
Well, in terms of the advertiser, and we could take TiVo, for example. I love TiVo. You know, if you don't, you have a TiVo, don't you?
If you're using TiVo as a verb, or you know, kind of
brand,
like a yeah,
brand, Chris.
No,
you
I don't
own a TiVo.
I can TiVo something, but I use the Microsoft Media Center edition, or I just download something off of BitTorrent for something that I've already paid for. For instance,
Bad Gnome. Bad.
No,
bad.
No. Time out. I've already paid for access to that content, and especially I've got a subscription to HBO, Showtime, Cinemax. I've got it all. So, I don't mind getting something that I otherwise could not have got. So, like the video game revolution that was on PBS, I completely missed it. I downloaded it on BitTorrent. So, that was something that was on public PBS. So, everything that was, it was right there. There was no crass commercialism slapped on it. Why should I feel bad about getting a copy of that? Why?
Oh, you shouldn't. I think that's fine. I was referring to bad in terms of TiVo is king.
Oh, no. I disagree on that.
Okay, well, we can take that up and round
three, good.
But
yeah,
let's
sure, but
back to your question.
Go ahead.
In terms of, you know, what is TiVo going to do? Because, you know, I sit down on my TiVo and I zip-zap through 2-3 minutes of commercials in a few seconds flat. I'm not seeing those ads. So what is the next step? Well, what they're going to do now is show a static ad so that when you're fast-forwarding, you've got pretty much what amounts to a banner or a button. Or a pop-up on your TV screen during that time you're forwarding.
I disagree about the pop-up. I may say banner, yes, pop-up, no.
Well, it is something that is, you know, since there's already commercials there, you could argue that it doesn't matter what's in that space. But they're going to make it so that you have to see some sort of advertising as you're forwarding through.
Why is that a problem?
I don't think it's a problem. I think that they have every right to monetize that space, the same as we have the right to monetize our space. You asked, where is it going? And I think that's where it's going, and I think that's relevant. Now, to take TiVo to in the area of customization, they're watching our viewing habits. They know, you know, exactly what I'm watching on my TiVo. They know when I'm watching it. They know what I'm forwarding through. They know which segments I'm going back and repeating again and again. Well, why not, just as they deliver programming that customizes my tastes, why not deliver advertising that is going to be in line with my taste? So if my kids are used to watching you know, whatever it is they're watching on the Disney Channel again and again, why not send them ads during that that segment that are going to be for a trip to Disney World or the latest Disney toy or the latest DVD? It's targeted the same as they try now to target advertising, but even that, even then, lots of advertising we see on TV is a lot of hit and miss. You know, when is the best time for Coca-Cola to show a Coke commercial? There's a lot of opportunities. How can they target that even better? Well, by watching our viewing habits, they're going to be able to do that. That's what Google does. They watch the habits of the web surfer, and they deliver ads based on the content of that web page. It's beautiful. It's a great idea, and I am totally and utterly boggled that it is taking Yahoo so long to get in the game.
Well, they've kind of already in the game, but the problem that I see faces Yahoo at this point is that they only deal with resellers of the reseller. So you have to go through a completely different level in order to use a Yahoo search contextually relevant service at this point in time.
We're talking, Google started this in, what, June 2003?
Yeah.
And Yahoo is now playing follow the leader. In fact, just got an email today for a news story that Yahoo is now, you know, launching their, expanding their email, free email from 250 meg to a gigabyte, which is what Google has had Gmail for how long now? Months? Yahoo is playing follow the leader.
Well, but they have to, just because they already had an infrastructure, and so they've already built up I could see it from Yahoo's side in the sense that they already had the infrastructure, whereas Google was pretty much building it from scratch. So that's, I think, probably one of the reasons why the beta was leaked just to so many invitations, is because they were growing the infrastructure instead of actually planting the infrastructure and then just opening it up to everybody. They actually, I think, did it smart. And Yahoo,
but you know, there's no limit to the number of invitations anybody can send.
No, but it started that way, and again, I don't know anything about the infrastructure costs of Gmail, and I don't make any representations at all for anybody's services other than how I use them. But, you know, in talking with Robert Scoble about how Hotmail had to deal with the quote-unquote Gmail issue, it was told to me in that way. I mean, there were costs that had to be figured out because they had already these millions of users. How do you change a system that was working fine until something else came along? And sometimes that takes time to actually change the infrastructure the way something works.
Is Gmail public yet?
I think the graphic I looked at last night, as of speaking to you right now, said it was still beta. Okay. That was according to the graphic on gmail.com, of course.
You know, somebody, you've probably got this tip somewhere on your site, but somebody last week showed me how you can turn your Gmail mailbox into a hard drive.
Yeah, that's easy.
Windows system.
Yeah, there's a utility you can download that will facilitate, like, it's a drive. It's a virtual drive, or a network drive.
More storage.
Pretty much, free gigabyte. Anybody can use it. I don't have it installed in my system just because I have so many gigabytes that I don't even use.
Right.
So it's like, I mean, if I was doing more network stuff stuff on the road, then it would make a lot more sense to use that kind of extension because that way I could have access to common files. But then again, there's the security issue that I wouldn't even want to
use. I thought you were a traveling gnome, though. I've seen you on those commercials.
No, the roaming gnome. He's actually from Travelocity. I'm trying to get
gnome.
A hold of his agent. Yeah, I want the roaming gnome to be at Gnomedex, but I don't know who to speak to at Travelocity yet. But wouldn't that be great?
That would be funny. Have you thought of creating a little stand-up figure?
You know,
yourself in a gnome fashion.
I am so not into physical merchandise. it's just overhead I don't want to deal with.
You can rent your chest, sure. But
yeah, see, that's easy. But when you deal with physical merchandise, you're dealing with hard costs. Even doing Gnomedex, at times can be so taxing on our resources that introducing any kind of physical anything, yeah, people think, oh, wouldn't it be cute to have a Chris Perillo bobblehead? Maybe. Am I in love with the idea? No, not really.
A little plaster gnome for all attendees of Gnomedex. I love it.
They're already going to get a really cool T-shirt, and just wait till you see what we're putting together for the T-shirt. It's going to be nice. It's going to be really nice.
I'm hoping to join you out there, but we're still working on that, aren't we?
Well, you're more than welcome to join us. I don't know if we're going to do anything in any official capacity. One of the things that I'm aiming to do with this year's Gnome Dex is keep a couple of slots during the schedule completely open and subject to the conversation that happens during the course of the conference. So the conference creates itself. And, you know, I've heard about other gatherings that kind of work that way where, you know, everything that happens springs out of the people who are there. And I figure, well, why not bring that to Gnome Dex, too? I mean, we've got so many people who are already coming and just fantastic ideas and concepts and conversations. It's like, well, it's kind of a shame that they all usually happen in the hallway. I want to bring some of those to the main stage as well.
Well, in fact, there's a conference coming up. You and I are both part of a group of whose name we do not speak. And we're going to be going to the Southeast here in a couple months, and the meeting is going to be far more casual in terms of the structure, and we're just going to see where it goes.
Yeah. It's when you start putting two and two together and you start putting people together who have already figured out the equation, then good things come of it, usually. And sometimes that's what I hope to accomplish with doing things like this, where people who can listen in are like a fly on the wall, so they're gleaning something from the conversation, or they're, you know, they're
swat
thinking
that guy
about
over in the corner there.
Can't do that.
Notes.
No, we've actually got for our approach, the Chris Perillo Show's approach to the way that we're doing this has actually been met with quite a few very positive responses, because it's not just me who's talking into a phone and saying things. It's talking to a phone with someone who is doing things and doing things differently, or at least has something to offer back or a conversation worth having.
Well, it can be very instructive if people listen closely. You know, if you can walk away with one tidbit, one nugget that you can apply to your business, you know, whether it's a podcast, an interview, an ebook, whatever, smart web publishers are looking for those tidbits and taking them and running with them and watching them multiply their business.
So you think it's just a matter of time, to kind of spring back to a recent question, it's just a matter of time before contextually relevant ads start popping up in television or in radio?
Absolutely, and they have to. The, you know, advertising models, the mediums have changed only so far as the Internet is just taking a huge pocket of the audience away from traditional print media, radio, and TV. But those the means of advertising on those old mediums has to change, because what people's expectations of advertising is changing. And as more and more people get used to seeing contextual ads online, advertisers are going to get smart. Technology is going to be developed for TV that's going to deliver what people want, because, you know, we become numb to standard advertising. Even on the Internet, what form of advertising is virtually invisible to you? It's been around the longest.
Punch the monkey.
Oh, the monkey. It's a blasted monkey. And what size banner does that monkey come on?
God, gigantic? I can't even remember. Well, I think at that time it was just 468 by 60.
That's right.
The dimensions.
Remember when those came into being? Wired.com was the first one to sell ad space for the 468 by 60 banner. Those things are ubiquitous now. I still have them on my pages. The CPM on them is so low. It's ridiculous.
They're a giveaway.
People don't see them. They're so used to them that they're virtually invisible.
It's the way, and there's a lot of reasons for that, from my perspective. And that's what I find most interesting about what's happening now with media and advertising and changing models, is because traditionally you had to go through certain people to get from point A to point B. Whether that was getting press, whether that was getting advertising, it didn't matter. You had to go through certain channels. Well, there has just been this disintermediation of colossal proportions, the likes of which the world has never seen. And I think a lot of people who are used to having control and no longer have control still think they have control, which is funny, because control is always an illusion, I mean, for anybody. But to see the model change, to get them to think differently, is going to take time. And that's where, you know, I think the underground is really making things happen. And Doc Searle speaks, you know, well of this, that, you know, technology starts down here at the grassroots level, and then it grows up from there. Very seldom does technology come from the top down. It comes from the bottom up. And, you know, technology forces us to see the world differently. You talk about desensitization of, you know, advertising that happens to be on the web. I would disagree to a certain point. Now, in terms of clicking on things, yes, and there's a reason why Google Ads work better than banners, but that's another, I'm sure, another topic. It's based on people, the way that people, people read text, but they just look at graphics. But
right.
That being said, there's an inherent importance of building that kind of identity online. It's a brand, and brand is everything, and I argued this a few years ago with the proliferation of affiliate programs. So, like, if you go to Amazon.com, for instance, anybody can sign up for an Amazon.com affiliate program. You get a little affiliate code you slap onto the end of the URL that anybody can erase and put their own in and then make money on any bounty from any subsequent purchase. But that completely, oh yeah, Amazon, hey, yeah, they're reaping just untold fortunes from doing that because they have a brand. But the problem is the person who passes along the contact, say I write about a wireless router. And I say, I just got this wireless router, it's great, blah, 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 blah. If you want to purchase it, check it out on Amazon.com. And I'm just picking them as a brand, a random brand that, you know, I've got an affiliate program for. Anybody has got an affiliate program for. Let's say I pass that link along. So, in theory, anybody who clicks on that link could, you know, purchase anything from Amazon.com. I would get paid a very small percentage for passing that along. Well, that's a problem, because the branding that I've done for Amazon has gained me virtually nothing if the person visits that page and doesn't do anything with it. It devalues branding, these affiliate programs. And I'm seeing that come almost full circle back to what I was saying originally, is that brand is important. So even though people would be skimming through commercials on television, if TiVo's serving up some kind of banner, that's brand. You can't do anything with that banner, but you see the logo, you see the message, and it's brand. Or you're listening to radio, and you hear a message 17 times, 27 times, and it hammers through your head. So when you need to go shopping online for a particular product, where do you go? You go to whatever the first place in your head it happens to be. Oh, I need to go to this place because they do this. And I remember this because they have this jingle. And that's all about branding. There is no action. There is no specific... I'm dead serious when I say this. There is no specific way of tracking branding, and there is no ROI attached to branding. But its value is immeasurable in terms of what it can gain. Not only the person who needs the brandability, the company with the brand, but also the vehicle or the gateway through which the brand is discovered. So that's where I find, you know, branding actually headed. I think brand is going to become increasingly important with as much as happening online and as much as happening in television and radio. None of these mediums are dead. I mean, they're just as viable today as they were before. But I think the way the value is perceived through any one of these mechanisms is going to grow increasingly important. It's going to come back to that one message, and that's branding. And I believe, is where Google, with AdSense, has kind of closed that loop. They really have. They've made it something that makes it worth my time to help brand somebody else and not necessarily getting lost in that transaction.
Well, you know, for the most part, I agree that the mediums are still viable, but newspaper readership is down. Radio listenership is down.
Wait. In which markets, though?
With just about all of them. Talk radio is up. But in terms of, here's the thing. Now we're going satellite radio. And what you're seeing in radio is the same thing that's happened in TV. Back when the major networks were all there were, they had the majority of the advertising dollar. Now how many jillions of channels do we have? It's so diluted that you can't possibly have as many people watching 100 networks as you had watching 3. So when I say that it's down, in terms of sheer numbers that are going to see any given ad, unless it's the Super Bowl or the Academy Awards, they're reaching far fewer people.
In terms just overall versus the Internet?
Right. I mean, the Internet is taking it. The Internet is killing off the newspaper. Where do you go to get your news?
Me personally, anywhere convenient. That is through Wi-Fi or the internet.
Right. Yeah, and myself as well. I don't subscribe to the newspaper anymore.
But wait a minute. What about these? And I hate to label this segment of society this way. But what about the legacy? What about people who did not grow up with the internet and or who are just kind of on the tail end of really understanding what the internet can do? The people who are out there who still need to have emails printed and handed to them, or for goodness sake, something faxed to them. What about that segment of the population? Because it seems to me, in general trends, that those are the people who are the decision makers and who can make things happen.
They're certainly out there, but let me ask you this. Are those numbers increasing or decreasing?
And that's a good question.
I would just say common sense, because people are getting older. And more people are getting online, and the people that are coming into the world now are going to be tied into the internet. I think those numbers are going to be decreasing. So they'll be less and less significant as time goes on. Not that those people aren't important, but those who are online are going to expand versus the number that are not online. And we're talking globally.
Well, we're still in that chasm at this point. To be able to
tell. I'm in the chasm.
Oh. It's true. To be able to tell, let's say, for example, a network representative, a salesperson who sells time on a television network, whether local, national, international, what have you, to tell them that the time slot at 3 a.m. is just as valuable as the time slot at 7 p.m. is something difficult to convey. And unfortunately, as much as you and I have drunk the Kool-Aid that has, given us untold, value in our personal life to be able to use a digital video recorder or a PVR, like a TiVo, like a media center from Microsoft, any one of these technologies that allows us to view the content whenever we want, we're in a minority, Joel. I hate to tell you, but the numbers don't lie. We are in a minority. A lot of people still don't use that. It's increasing, but it's going to take time before it reaches a critical mass. We're seeing a lot of articles now being published from marketing companies. In fact, one was just reported the other day that some companies just don't see RSS in their future communication strategy. They're sticking with email. Why is that? These are companies who find that email is just the easiest way. They're waiting for that chasm to be crossed. Because right now, as much as you and I understand RSS and how to publish it, how to get it from point A to point B, a lot of people don't. I've had people wanting to listen to the Chris Perillo Show in some type of quote-unquote podcast format, in the sense that they can synchronize the audio with their media player easily. But as soon as I say they have to download something, it's gone. They've lost it. They're done. They don't even want to deal with it anymore. So my question is, what do you believe is it going to take to cross that chasm to making it more easy for advertising companies to understand why contextual-based advertising is better than a spray-and-pray method of just sticking with 468x60 banners?
Well, I think the tools have a lot to do with it. I mean, you want to watch TV, you push the power on button, and you go through the channels. That's all there is to it. It doesn't take a lot. RSS is still at the point where somebody might have to download an additional application. Hey, you run across anybody who needs to read an e-book and they have a problem with it because they don't have Adobe Acrobat Reader installed. They want to download a program and they can't install it because they don't have WinZip. I think, self-extracting files have gone a long way towards helping remedy that problem, but as time goes on, there's going to be more tools like NewsGator, excellent RSS news reader that helps people to easily get into the subjects that they're looking for. And I believe you offer feeds on another reader. Is it Hot Dog?
I've got the Locker Gnome News Feeder, is what it's called. Yeah, it's a co-brand with Sausage.
I think as the tools become available, and those who are on the cutting edge in developing these tools certainly have an opportunity to reap the benefits, and then those tools get widespread, kind of like ICQ. They started putting ICQ out there, and both you and I have very low ICQ numbers.
Wait, what's yours again, or are you willing to announce it?
It's 364249.
I beat you, 144832.
Yeah, you're way down there.
I was one of the first people to use ICQ.
And now they're, what, in 7-8 digits?
It's huge. Well, of course, most of the people I hear from on ICQ happen to be spammers, which is sad.
Look at the critical mass now. Okay, now everybody's got instant messengers, and I use Trillion to combine ICQ, AIM, Yahoo, and MSN into one instant messenger. But everybody's using these things, and it's an excellent method of delivery. If somebody could find a way to deliver contextual ads versus via instant messaging, hello.
But Google's kind of, I mean, to sidestep and to kind of speak about the same thing, Google's taken a few lumps on serving up contextual-based advertising alongside email within their Gmail product. Do you find that, if you've ever used Gmail before, or from people that you know have used Gmail before, is that a problem? Is that an issue? Since I don't have any experience with many webmail products other than, you know, testing them, is that an issue? Or is it an issue
I use Gmail, and it doesn't faze me in the least.
Okay,
you know,
but
I'm using their server space, and if they want to put an ad on the page, for the most part, to be honest, when I'm looking at email, I'm not used to looking at ads, and they're virtually invisible to me. So I would venture to say that the click-through rate on those particular ads through web email is probably pretty low.
But as a publisher of content, does it irk you that, let's say, a service, or a publisher of content, let's say, through either email or even RSS, that if someone is using your content and then serving up advertising within their shell, does that bother you?
No, because it is their shell. If people choose their email service, what I would like very much is if Google would allow us to start serving ads within our own emails.
Yeah, I would too.
RSS feeds.
And, no one's gotten it yet, though.
They're not quite there yet, and the lights will go on. I think they're probably wondering if it's going to compete with their own Gmail ads. That might be part of the issue.
But you're answering the question from a user's perspective. I want you to answer it from a publisher's perspective.
Would I like it if I had all the ad space going to the Gmail boxes instead of them? Of course. Sure. Give me as much inventory as I can possibly have. I will gladly use it. But, you know, at the same time, I realize that they have costs. They have infrastructure. They're providing this free email service, and they have the right to do what they want to do.
All right. So you've pretty much gone on record by saying that.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I would love it if they would start allowing us to have space. You know, one of the competitors that's come along is Canoodle with Bright Ads, and they just a couple weeks ago announced that you can deliver their contextual ads within an RSS feed. I haven't had the opportunity to play with it yet.
No. And I've worked with Fido on different levels. I look for alternative advertising mechanisms. So like next week's Chris Perillo show is actually, you know, not only is it sponsored by Microsoft Windows Media, who makes the show possible, but we're also doing something interesting with an advertiser or a sponsor, GoToMeeting. We're going to be doing like a live on-screen type of Chris Perillo show. So instead of doing like, you know, regular things where we're just talking about things, I'm actually going to be able to demonstrate for up to 200 people on screen like things. Like I'll talk about my favorite software or websites or show people exactly what I'm talking about instead of just talking about it. So we're trying to, you know, evolve the idea of really making it just so perfect, melding the delivery of the audience with the message of the advertiser, just putting them in together so it's not obtrusive. It's not something that sticks out like a sore thumb. That's what I look for. I mean, I look to advertisers to make them happy, and I look to my readership, my viewers, and make them happy. No one's going to be happy 100% of the time, but if I can make a lot of people happy most of the time, then I'm thrilled, because
right. If
I can go to bed and not feel bad about what I did that day, that's what I go for. That's my goal. If I don't have to work for another company and wear a uniform or a tie as long as I live, that's what I'm going for. It's the big picture.
You would look good in that McDonald's outfit, though.
You know, it's funny. I did last night, and I wrote about this very briefly. But I did a fast food burger comparison. It's made me sick. But it was worth doing, if only to prove a point. And it was just kind of fun. I don't know how many other people have decided to do this with their stomachs. But
it's kind of like what that movie Supersize Me.
Oh, have you seen that?
I have it. I swore off all fast food.
Oh, dude,
much.
I've been avoiding hydrogenated oils and most fast food for years, and unfortunately, I can't necessarily explain this to other people because they still like the taste of something.
Right.
But I can't pass judgment on what anybody decides to put in their mouth, and even some people that have gone back to or fallen back into their old ways of going to fast food find themselves watching Supersize Me again just to give themselves a wake-up call. It was
right.
That pivotal.
There's that, and have you read Fast Food Nation?
You know, that's something that was recommended to me. I've got a, I think, an audiobook, and I don't know if it was from Audible or another service, but I do have the audiobook. It's just that I haven't had the time to actually listen to it at this point.
It's a fabulous book, a great overview of popular culture in general, and how fast food just plays such an integral part in so many things that just, you know, it's so subtle, and yet it's ever present.
Well, I think what fast food is, I mean, obviously, I to call it food, I think it's questionable. And after having like a handful of different hamburgers from various fast food joints last night, I can tell you it's very questionable. It's the brand that people flock to, and it's the trusting of the brand. Or I know this brand, I know this company. If I want a perfect mocha frappuccino, I know I can go to Starbucks, and 9 times out of 10, depending on the barista, I can get it. And that's what I think is the power of a brand, as long as it's a strong brand. And there are obviously brands that have suffered because of things that they did not do right, but people are willing to pay $3, $4, $5 for, I mean, it's a glorified cup of coffee, essentially. But
right,
they're paying for not just the convenience, but they're paying for the brand. They buy into the brand time and time again until that brand burns them.
Yeah, since when did a grande become a small? You know, what's up with that?
No, I think the grande, no, a tall is a small, a grande is a medium, and a venti is a large.
Whatever.
Hey, you know, I've totally, after moving to Seattle, I kind of swore off coffee, and I'm now kind of just drinking it, not every day, but I've moved to, what's my drink of choice now? It's a tall soy mocha, one pump, no whip.
Let me reiterate, whatever.
Wait, now do you drink coffee? Do you understand the relationship?
I'm not a coffee drinker at all.
It's not just a drink. It's a relationship I have with the caffeine.
I understand, and that's why I avoid it. My personality is addictive enough, and I love chocolate chip cookies and ice cream, so, you know, I've got my own problems.
Okay, see, there you lost me there. I'm not a big chocolate chip. I'm really, honestly, I don't have a lot of sweets that surround me.
Oh, bring on the sugar, baby.
So that's what keeps you going, is the sugar.
No, I don't eat a lot of it. I mean, if I have something every day, then that's probably, you know, more than average for me, but I love it.
So a Malo,
bring on the carbs.
This is to fuel your Malamars addiction, then, all of this? That's what you're going for?
You know, it's kind of funny. Have you seen the Buy Me a Drink sites?
I kind of caught that wave.
Donate, like, buy Leo a latte, I think was one of them. A friend of ours, Leo Notenboom's got that. I launched buyjoeldessert.com.
Oh, my goodness.
Where people who want to show their appreciation for all the free content and services I've put out there over the last 10 years, they can go and they can make a donation via PayPal,
yeah,
and give me a donation that will buy me a Three Musketeers bar.
See,
or a small tin of caramel corn or a piece of chocolate cake.
I kind of took that route a few months ago. I put up something similar, only different. It's more serving to the people who read Locker Gnome. At the top of every newsletter, there's a set of links, like 10 links that are randomized every day. But basically, you give a donation to Locker Gnome, and it's you don't have to do it. It's a donation. So you can give, you know, I've had people give as low as $1, which doesn't make a lot of sense, and I've had people give as much as $50. And if you donate to Locker Gnome, I'll put your name, your company name, or whatever, in this list that's randomized.
Right.
So that's the way that I kind of open the door to donations without necessarily, I don't sell it. It's just like, hey, if you want to donate, fine. If you don't, it's no big deal. But at least I want to give something back to the people who are giving to me and allowing me to just, you know, just try something new. And hey, if that turns into a model for somebody else, great. I've then become a leading example and stuck my neck out there to do that. And that can be difficult at times.
Well, so go buy me dessert, and you'll see your link will be up on my page.
Oh, so you do that too?
Oh yeah. Everybody who's bought me a dessert gets a link on my page.
Oh.
And you know, I've got some pretty good page rank too. So when people figure out that hey, this is a good guy to get a link from, it's worth a small donation.
That's one of the things that I found not only on Chris Perillo or chris.perillo.com, my personal blog in my universe, but also on gnomedex.com. If you register for the event, I'll put your name in the blog roll, which not only appears on these websites, which have pretty decent page ranking and Alexa ranking, but you'll also, if you share that blog roll with people that go to your blog, it's like instant viral notification, like instant traffic for blogs. So I've actually kind of given people a way of increasing awareness for what they're doing by having them come to the conference, and I find almost no other conferences that are really doing that or tracking it that way. Again, from what I've seen, and not to say that you know we're the only people doing this at all, but I find that just providing as much value as I possibly can for that weekend is what I'm heading for. And it seems that in the same light, while you've never really done any type of or coordinated any kind of physical event, that's what you're trying to put together with your entire universe.
Absolutely, and you know, let's face it, you're an icon amongst,
well,
amongst gnomes.
It's a brand. And that's the funny thing about that is I've had at least three people who I respect in this space. The one who comes to mind right now is Jeff Barr, who runs Syndicate.com, also works for Amazon. And Syndicate, SYNDIC8.com, is pretty much like a directory of RSS feeds. He has had the Locker Gnome mouse pad that he got at GnomeDex. He's had it there, and now when his kids see something on the screen that kind of resembles my face, they'll say, hey, it's, and he'll have to explain, no, it's not. But that brand apparently has a huge impact with kids. My little cartoon logo.
So you're not just scaring small children.
No, they love it. They eat it up. I don't know why.
Who are the ones that are going to be visiting your site in the future?
You know, I'm thinking I need to start offering some type of product. Although I'm trying to stay away from like any kind of McDonald's type of product, I think I need to start venturing down the road of something a family friendly kind of resource. What do you think?
I'll tell you what. If you are, and I know just the person that you need to JV with to pull that off. If you want to start with doing a Locker Gnome Teens or Locker Gnome Kids, then you capture their addresses and you mail them a birthday card.
Oh yeah?
Mail them a birthday card every year and start soaking up, you know, those.
Yeah, but that adds costs.
And yeah, but you will develop customers for life.
Any time you talk to me about a physical product, seriously, I shy away from it. Having had experience with selling T-shirts online, it was cool and it was fun, but it was also one of the worst things that we ever decided to do. It was fun, it was neat, but I find that it's much easier to produce products and then have people come and get them, i.e. doing it at a conference, than it is to produce a product. I mean, hey, if you're a ThinkGeek.com or, you know, a huge clearinghouse for these things, I think Custom Ink also does modification for screen printing as well. If you're any one of these clearinghouses, it's fine. It's built into your infrastructure. Or you could use Cafe Press to a certain degree. But doing it on your own, you know what? If it sounds fun, but I just don't see many business models in doing it that way. I think the brick and mortars have it over us in terms of physical products at this point.
Puts a cramp in your style, huh?
It just takes away from the resources that I should be dealing with. So, you know, I'd rather spend my time on something that takes just a little bit of modification or a little tweaking rather than have to deal with something physical. I mean, think about this. The Xbox recall, I don't know if you caught this, but the power cords were apparently getting too hot. And in some instances, the replacement power cords that they had to issue are also having the same problem.
Oh, really? No, I didn't.
Oh, dude, you talk about, and yeah, there are a lot of Xboxes out there, but basically there's a recall that's going on, where if you have an Xbox, you should get this replacement cord, because it's known to, the current cords that we're shipping, or still are shipping, at least at boxes that are already on the shelf, apparently have this flaw where it could burn you. So they had to issue all these replacements, and I can only imagine doing some kind of T-shirt where there was something on it like that caused paper cuts or something like that, and having to reissue. You know, I just have these nightmares that involve physical products that I just don't ever want to deal with, and I do at times, but just not my core competency. I'll let somebody else do that. So I'll use products, and I'll talk about products, but as far as making them goes or facilitating, not so much.
Well, we'll have to talk more about getting some sort of branding that heads towards something for kids and teens, because that market, boy, they're all going to be using internet religiously, just ubiquitous part of their lives. Anyway, I have to run.
Yeah, Joel, I appreciate the time.
I've got a wife and kids at home.
Yeah.
She asked me to get an office off-site so that she could miss me. You know, she says,
yep.
"If you don't leave, I can never miss you."
You know, I'm trying to explain this to Ponzi, who also works at home with Locker Gnome, and I think when we move into our house proper, because right now we're renting, I think we're going to have separate offices because of that, so that we can miss each other, and so that we can, you know, operate in our own space, and then at the end of the day, you know, feel like, you know, not necessarily be at each other's throats as we would be if you spend every waking moment with them. Do you find the
yeah,
same thing to be true?
It's easy to get tired of each other.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't want that to happen. Any
no.
Absence does grow, make the heart grow fonder, even if it's just for a few hours.
Uh-oh. Ponzi's leaving. I gotta go. I gotta go catch this fire.
Good talking to you.
Thanks, Joel. We appreciate it.
The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media. Download Windows Media Player 10 at Microsoft.com/Windows Media.